is The Talking Dead, a podcast dedicated to the AMC TV show The Walking Dead.
Hello, everyone. My name is Chris.
And my name is Jason.
And this is The Talking Dead number 604, recorded on Monday, October the 24th, 2022. Hello, Jason. How are you doing?
I am doing okay, Chris. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad. Feeling a little better. Not 100% yet, though, over my cold.
Super.
I do feel like I've had a slight relapse. I don't know what it was today. I kind of feel okay, but my sinuses have been bothering me, and it's just one of those things that just won't seem to go away fully.
Well, get it together, man.
I'll try. I'll try my best. I mean, maybe it will. Maybe by this time tomorrow, I'll be back to 100%. I don't know, but yeah. Here I am.
You really got to, you know, the secret to getting rid of a cold is to clench your sphincter as hard as you possibly can for at least 10 to 15 minutes. And if you can do that without blowing an aneurysm, then you should be good to go.
Okay, so just give me 10 minutes here, and I'll...
No, you can do it while you're talking. Okay, it's fine.
Can I? I don't know.
It's the kind of thing you can do any time of day at any point.
All right. Well, thanks for that advice. I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah.
So listen, we are here to talk about the latest episode of The Walking Dead, but there's something I want to bring up real quick first, and that is that, as you know, Jason, we are now over 600 episodes into this crazy podcast.
I've heard that, yes.
And with that many episodes out there, it's started to cause some problems with our RSS feed. The RSS feed is what you use to distribute the podcast, basically, and submit it to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other of the podcast aggregation sites. And there's generally a maximum size that they'll kind of accept and a maximum number of episodes, which right. We are well beyond at this point. And it's been problematic for a little while, but I've kind of been trying to ride with it and do what I can to make it work, shrink the feed a little bit, things like that. And it's been okay. But what it's been doing for the last little while is causing the feed to update and refresh really slowly.
Right.
So when I put out a new episode, I mean, it might show up, you know, almost immediately. It also might not show up for 48 hours, which
Shit.
Is a huge bummer. So
that's way too many hours.
Way too many hours, right? Exactly. So I'll release an episode, you know, tonight, later tonight, after we finish recording this, and I'll get up in the morning and be like, fingers crossed, it's on the feed, and I'll check my podcast app and it's not there. And it's not there all day, and I troubleshoot and I screw around and try to get it to release. And eventually it will, but I'm worried that it will just stop working entirely at some point. So the solution to this is
have
to...
Have the show come to an end?
Right, is to just stop podcasting. And
well, yeah, just have the Walking Dead eventually come to a logical and moral conclusion.
Maybe.
And then stop podcasting.
Well, I mean, I figured we'd just stop podcasting now because, you know, there's 4 episodes left. We don't need to finish that out, right?
All right. Well, have a good night. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. If you need to get in touch with us, don't bother because we're done.
Actually, the real solution is to limit the number of older podcasts that are in the feed. So I've been forced, my hand has been forced finally to do this, which I don't like doing because I like to have everything out there and easily accessible. And I'll be honest, I've tried it before and every single time I do it, things start working, but almost immediately people contact me and say, hey, I was only on episode 50 and now I can't find, you know, 51 through 100 or whatever. It's not on Spotify anymore or whatever. And so then I re-enable them all and try to figure it out and hope it works and stuff like that. But I think we're at a point where unfortunately it's just not going to be a thing. So I have currently limited the feed to 400 episodes. So the first 200 that we recorded are no longer on the feed. That means that you won't be able to find them on Apple or Spotify or wherever, unfortunately. However, you can find them on our website. Everything all the way back to episode number 1 is available to stream on our site, talkingdeadpodcast.com. So I know it's annoying, and I'm really, really sorry for anyone that is going through the back catalog or has recently started at the beginning or anything like that. Unfortunately, you'll have to go to the site and listen to them there. You can also just download the files, the audio files, straight from the website and load them onto your phone or put them on some other way manually. Again, I know it's annoying and I'm sorry.
Yeah, burn it to a record and then put it on your hi-fi.
You could do that too. Could do
you
that.
Download it on the Wi-Fi, play it on your hi-fi.
Imagine how good we would sound in beautiful vinyl analog sound.
You can get vinyl recorders.
Yeah. Really?
I mean, it'll cut. Yeah, well, it's not really like a vinyl record that that you buy at the store because those are pressed, right? But the ones that they record is kind of a softer version of the vinyl. They're not as durable. You can't play them as often. But, you know, if you have the ability to record onto vinyl, you just do it again if you need to. But, yeah, you can get those for sure.
That's pretty cool. So you can
call it a lacquer.
There you go. You can do that if you want. But regardless of how you listen, you can acquire the files at the website, talkingdeadpodcast.com. Everything is back there. It's organized relatively well so that you can just, from the menu at the top, choose a season of any of the Walking Dead shows, and it will show you all of our episodes covering that season. So things should be pretty easy to find. You can also search by episode number. Every single one has the episode number in the title. So you should be able to find everything relatively easily, as long as you're not looking on Apple or Spotify or wherever.
Yeah.
All right. Enough about that. Let's get on with it here, Jason. We are here to talk about season 11, episode 20 of The Walking Dead, and it was called What's Being Lost. Sadly, no title reads this week.
Well, there was one. You just did it.
My own. There you go.
Yeah. Good man.
Of course, it aired on AMC on October the 23rd. And let's begin our recap.
Surely.
It starts with Judith doing her standard voiceover, talking about how important it is to have people that we can count on. She says words and actions and being able to put somebody else's life ahead of your own is what makes, you know, those bonds important. And we're seeing visuals of Daryl and Carol mostly,
yeah,
including all the way back to season one, season two, where Sophia comes out of the barn. So a good reminder of what those two have been through.
Yeah, and Terminus. And we got a lot of Carol, and my first thought was, oh, shit.
Well, you know, last week was it what? We had a lot of Eugene, right? So
yeah,
they're not killing these people off. That would be too obvious if that's the case. But it is a indicator of who the episode kind of focuses on, right?
Well, yes. I mean, it's the same as any previously on, you know, block of TV that you get. If it's in the previously on reel, that's what is going to be focused on. They're just reminding you of some shit that's going to be relevant as we go through the episode. So, you know, the fact that I knew it was going to be a Carol-centric episode based on that yep. information, but I was worried because of, you know, the state of the Dixon contingency and how that's going to go and how much time has passed since we found out that Carol won't be on that show.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta say, I was a little bit worried. I'm like, did the writers have enough time to put together this episode after knowing that information? Is it enough time for them to write an episode where Carol kicks the bucket?
I mean, I don't think so. And I mean, I don't know exactly how long ago it was that information came out, but it wasn't that long. You know, they've wrapped filming on these episodes a while back in post-production and stuff like that. So I wasn't worried. But what I will recall, or I mean, what I will remind you of, Jason, is that way back when we first heard about the Daryl and Carol spinoff,
yep.
you and I made predictions on what the final episode to feature each of these characters would be before they ride off into the sunset.
Uh-huh.
Now, those predictions are kind of moot at this point because, you know, Carol's not going to the show and Daryl is. But just as a reminder, I chose episode 21. So not this one, but next week's episode as Carol's last episode.
Oh, yeah.
Well, technically, both of the last episodes. We didn't separate the two characters. And you chose episode 24, the very last one.
Yeah.
And I've still got that sticky note on my wall right here that I wrote it down, so I won't forget.
I love sticky notes.
Yeah. Not that this is episode 21, but, you know, I would have been close had it been Carol's last episode this week.
Yeah, I was just a little concerned. I was a little worried.
Okay. Well, nothing to worry about because we transition to Carol gathering food at the bakery in the Commonwealth. Ezekiel comes in and offers some medical supplies for her to take with her. She looks away to gather a little more food, and when the camera comes back to the door he was standing in, he's gone.
Yeah, and then I just thought it was aliens. I was like, fuck, they really zapped that guy out of there pretty quick.
They just beamed him straight up.
Because Carol didn't hear anything, and she's got some pretty good situational awareness. I was a little surprised by this.
Yeah, well, he's gone, and then two guys enter the bakery to apprehend her, just like we saw happen to Rosita last episode. Carol, also like Rosita, fights back. She manages to escape from them. She runs out the back door, and as she's going, she's knocking stuff over to try to block their way.
She whacks one guy in the neck with a tray, right?
Yes.
So those trays are amazing. Like, they're pure, uncoated aluminum trays. And they are really, really good, and I'll tell you why.
Please do.
They are the best at freezing and unfreezing stuff. So if you have something that's in the freezer and you need to unfreeze it, throw it on an aluminum tray, uncoated aluminum tray, it will thaw super goddamn quick. And if you need something to freeze real fast, put it on an aluminum tray, stick it in the freezer.
Is it because the aluminum like conducts the heat especially well? Like it pulls the heat through into the frozen thing and thaws it faster?
Yeah. It dissipates the heat. They're absolutely amazing. I have a couple of small ones and a couple of big ones just for freezing shit. And it turns out that the last time I went to the Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, I bought a bunch of frozen pizzas. Did I tell you that?
Yeah.
So I brought a bunch of frozen pizzas back, and they say put it on a tray and put it in the oven. And as it turns out, my big aluminum tray is the exact same size that they use at the restaurant to make the pizza, because it fits in the pizza fits in it just amazingly perfectly.
Well, that's exciting.
It's kind of scary, in fact.
Okay. Well, that is really exciting, and I'm glad you like pizza from the Sioux that much.
Yeah. It's the best pizza ever.
Okay. Very cool. Well, trays are good for thawing stuff and also hitting dudes in the neck with.
Oh, yeah. When in doubt, you know, whack them with a tray.
Whack them with a tray. All right.
So, yeah, that's it. I just wanted to talk very seriously and specifically about these baking trays that were in this restaurant.
Very cool.
I applaud them.
Very good. After our opening credits, we have Carol. She's making her way to find Daryl. There's a couple of foam suits and the two guys that are after her. They're around. They're looking for her. She cautiously approaches a building and she finds some overturned crates, some bloodstains on the ground, some signs of a struggle. And inside the building, there's a guy who has attacked Daryl. He's got Daryl on the ground and he's strangling him. There's another dead guy on the ground nearby, who I assume Daryl's already killed. And this dude really has Daryl at a disadvantage. He's on top of him. He's kind of got his hands around his neck. The other dude starts to wake up as a zombie. So Daryl's struggling. He grabs the guy's face a couple times. He pokes a knife into this guy's shoulder. But Carol shows up and clobbers him with a 2x4, knocking him off.
Yeah.
And then as this guy's getting up, his former friend, who's now a zombie, gets up, bites him in the neck, and then Daryl kills them both with his knife. In fact, he kills the zombie, and then he kills the other dude before he's actually dead. So he just murders that guy. And then he tells Carol that they took the kids and they took everybody.
Yep. So I'm going to tell you something that's kind of sad.
Okay.
The phrase, till death do us part, is not only for marriages, but also for friendships.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, once you're dead, all bets are off. You know, if they wake up as a zombie, you know, it's fair game to bite you in the neck.
Yeah, well, we kind of already knew that. Zombies, well, that's
what
they do.
We did, but I just wanted to say that, you know, you might be hurt if somebody dies near you and then comes and bites you in the neck. I don't know if these guys were married or not, but it doesn't matter.
No.
Because till death do you part is applicable for friendship as well as for marriage.
I think so. That's true.
It'd be even sadder if they were married, because that's quite the betrayal.
It really is. But
because it would feel really good at first, right? Having your partner come and hug you from the back and then start nibbling your neck, but then you realize, is going too far.
Uh-oh. Now I'm dead, too.
Yeah, so.
That's anyway, a bummer.
Weird, well, sad situation. Sad. I assume they're married.
Okay, fine. Sad situation. Daryl's pretty lucky that Carol showed up because he did not seem to have the upper hand on that guy.
Which is why we had to do it from, why we couldn't see the whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had to absolutely, there's no way that we could have seen Daryl get into that situation. We only had to see Daryl get out of it. If we had seen Daryl get into it, we'd all be going, bullshit. Yeah. Two guys getting the drop on Daryl? I don't think so.
I don't think so. That's
so we
right.
had to start there.
Yeah. Well, we did. But, yeah, you know, it was a tense scene. It was fun. I enjoyed watching Daryl, try to poke the dude's eyes out, right?
I mean, I like that kind of thing, too.
Yeah, of course. He's lucky. Anyways, he's lucky Carol showed up.
Yeah.
We cut over to Pamela. She is in her office meeting with, I don't know, her board of directors, a group of community leaders. I don't know who these people are, just prominent
money
people.
Money people, funders.
Ah, funders. Okay, sure. One of them offers her condolences for Sebastian's death. And then suddenly Yumiko enters all in a huff and demands to know what's going on. And she even punches a guy in the face who tried to block her way into Pam's office. And Pamela says that she's removed her friends from the Commonwealth, Yumiko's friends.
Uh-huh.
Yumiko accuses her of disappearing people. And Pamela essentially admits to doing this and doing this to the kind of people who disrespect the laws. She's like, yeah, whatever you want to call it, they're gone.
Yeah, it wasn't, due process. What is it? Show me the body? What is that? What is that Latin phrase for? It's a common law phrase. Anyway, so my favorite phrase for this kind of thing comes from the movie Brazil,
uh-huh.
where Ian Holm says that Tuttle has been completed.
Completed.
That's the term.
See.
It's like here it says he's deleted. Here he says he's completed. Here he says he's disappeared. So my favorite one is completed. We've completed him.
Okay. Well, Pamela has been completing people and she just admits to it.
Yep.
And then she tells Yumiko that she will be prosecuting Eugene on behalf of the Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea here is Pam is threatening Yumiko's friends and her brother to ensure that she does it, to ensure that she does access the prosecution. And she thinks that having a friend of Eugene be the one to prosecute him will reinforce to the people of the Commonwealth, how good a place this is. Because if someone is willing to stand up on behalf of the Commonwealth and put her friend in jail and or condemn him to death, well, the Commonwealth must be the place to be because why would anyone do that otherwise, right?
Yeah. And you did a better job of describing what needs to be done than Pamela did. Pamela did it all wrong. You don't tell somebody what they need to do in order to help you. Mm-hmm. What you need to do is you need to convince them to step up to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And that's what you said, you need somebody to stand up and do this for the good of the Commonwealth, for all that. All those arguments that you made is a much better way to put it than Pamela ever did.
Yeah, yeah. You're saying make the person almost think it was their idea in a way,
well, not
right?
really their idea, but you be honest with them that they need to, I know this is tough, but we need you to step up and be this and do this.
Yeah.
It's a call to action to their pride or, you need them. It gives them a sense of purpose. It's a better from a leadership point of view, it's a better way to do things.
Yeah, for sure. Well, at this point, Yumiko is kind of considering her options, but we cut over to Daryl and Carol who are, coming down an alleyway somewhere in the Commonwealth, apparently on their way to find Mercer. Daryl mentions that they've taken everybody, even Dog. So they took Dog.
Sons of bitches took the fucking Dog.
What's wrong with these people? They talk a bit and they agree that they have to find Hornsby and that it's not going to be easy.
Yeah. Well, the zombie apocalypse happened in 2000, what, 9?
10.
10? Mm-hmm. Okay, so they didn't have the advantage of seeing John Wick, before the zombie apocalypse. Because if they had seen John Wick before the zombie apocalypse, you would know you don't fuck with a guy's dog. You fuck with and steal his car, fine.
Yeah.
Beat him up, fine. Kill his dog, you are dead. Like all of you, all y'all are dead.
Totally. Now, they're not saying dog is dead, but dog was no. taken.
You don't fuck with a guy's dog.
Don't screw with a guy's dog.
That's a call to action right there.
It really is. Well, that's what's happened. So they're on their way to find Hornsby. Back with Yumiko, she's gone to see her brother in the hospital who's treating a patient. And after the patient leaves, she explains to him what's going on. And Tomi's advice is that maybe the best course of action is to go along with what Pamela wants. And he calls this survival. As in a way, you know, it protects her, Yumiko, and also it sort of protects or helps the most number of people, even though she has to throw Eugene under the bus and sacrifice him.
Yeah, the good of the many outweighs the good of the few, or even the one.
Right, that's what Tomi is suggesting here.
Also what Spock says.
That's right. They're very similar, those two.
Yeah.
So as Yumiko is leaving, walking through the hospital, Connie appears in a doorway and pulls her into a room, and they have a conversation in American Sign Language, which is cool.
Yeah.
Connie essentially tells Yumiko that she escaped from the guy that came to arrest her. So while she was being apprehended, she escaped by stabbing him in the leg, and she's going to wait there in the hospital until he leaves, because he came to the hospital to get treatment for the stab wound, which makes sense. And when he leaves, she's going to follow him, and maybe he'll, you know, lead her back to where their friends are. Now, Yumiko realizes that the guy won't be looking for her, so she's going to follow him instead. And Connie is reluctant at first, but she agrees eventually.
Yeah, the old switcheroo.
Switcheroo. That's right.
You don't, if you have a whole bunch of people that are following somebody, you don't all follow the guy. You follow the one person who's following them, or you switch that person up. They're called the eye. When you're following somebody, they're the eye. You follow the eye, and that eye follows the person. But you got to switch the eye up so that you don't get made.
Mix it up a little bit.
This is a perfect tradecraft for spies and shit.
All right. Well, Yumiko and Connie, good spies. So we move back over to Daryl and Carol. They are now infiltrating the cell block where Lance is being held. They take out a couple of the foam suits that are patrolling the hall and then grab his keys and start looking through the cells for Hornsby. And of course, they find him at the one at the end of the hall.
Yep.
So in they go, and they find that, you know, he has chopped up Calhoun, and they find zombie Sebastian just kind of writhing in all the goop.
I imagine the actor.
Uh-huh.
It's such an awful, what an awful day he must have had. It's like, okay, we got to tie you up. First of all, we got to, you know, even if you're just hanging on to the chains, we're not tying you up, but your hands are on the chains so you don't get them in front of you. And we're going to cover you in this makeshift goo, and you got to writhe around on the floor in this other, you know, perfectly normal, warm, happy time, tasty goo, whatever it is. But you got to roll around, and you know it's not going to take 10 minutes. It's going to be all day that you are writhing around on the floor, hanging on to this thing with your hands behind your back and all this goo. And when you get thirsty, somebody's going to kneel on the floor and put a straw in your mouth so you can take a little sip. And that's probably what you're going to have for lunch, too. You're going to have some kind of protein shake, because you can't eat, because if your tummy's full of food, you're not going to want to writhe around on your tummy for the next couple hours. So it's just, I imagine the hell this actor must have gone through this day of shooting. And I applaud him for the effort, because it looked great.
It did look great. It looked super gross. And you're right. It doesn't sound like a fun thing to be doing. That's for sure.
I don't want to be an actor. You know, a lot of people want to be actors because it seems you just get to, you know, get dressed up and play act all day. It's like, no, man, you get up in the morning, you spend hours in the makeup chair, and you writhe around on a concrete floor in a gory mess all for your craft. I don't think so.
I mean, some people are more than willing than others, I guess, but you're right. He went swimming in a big pile of red goop. So
well, thank God we all can't be actors, and that other people that are more suited to this kind of thing do it.
Yeah,
I am not.
No, it didn't look fun, but it did look great, as you said. So Lance is there. He's kind of just muttering to himself, always a path, always a way, and he's fondling his coin. So, you know, he's still got his coin. Daryl comes in and kills Sebastian, puts a knife in his head, then tries to find out from Lance where his friends are. And he's really kind of threatening Lance and grabbing his face, you know, with some force. So then Carol takes over, and you think she's going to be like good cop Carol and maybe have a slightly, you know, softer hand with Lance. But she pretty much just threatens him too and says, if you won't tell us, you're useless and we're going to kill you.
Yeah, because if you're going to be in a buddy cop movie, it's got to be bad cop Carol.
That's right? What we've got here.
Yeah, you know, it's bad cop threatening and stuff like that. But then Carol comes up with a knife and she's not threatening. She's telling you what is about to happen.
Yeah.
Like it's not really a threat when it comes from Carol. It's, I've got a knife. It's to your head. I'm probably going to have to stab you.
Believe me when I say things to you that you're either helping us or I'm killing you, you know?
Yeah. And and somehow that's not a threat. It's just the way things are.
With Carol.
With Carol, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Lance says that he'll show them by taking them there. So he won't just tell them where they are. He has to take them there.
Smart.
And then Daryl notices that he has a radio frequency monitor on his leg that will set off an alarm if they leave the cell. They decide to go anyway. And Lance says he needs to do something first, which we don't know about right now.
Okay, so like 9 things about this. One is the ankle monitor that he has seems like it would be pretty standard police fare ankle monitor kind of tech.
Yeah.
Just because they're not going to invent new technology for in the zombie apocalypse for this kind of thing. So they're going to take existing tech to do this. Cutting off an ankle monitor is not a big deal. They're not hardened handcuffs that the Road Warrior, where you have a hacksaw and you'd have a quicker time hacking through your foot than you would through the through the handcuffs. It's just a piece of plastic. Sure, it might be, you know, steel bands within the piece of plastic, but you know, Daryl's knife shouldn't make short work of that. You're not going to have to cut off his leg to get that thing off.
Yeah, I mean, when the thing about that is, and they mentioned cutting off the foot, right? And he's like, but then I won't be able to walk, yada yada. But the thing is, like, either they run out with it on and it sets the alarm off.
Yeah.
Or they cut it off.
Uh-huh.
And I think the implication is by cutting it off, you'll set the alarm off anyways. So
that's not the tech.
So what's the difference?
That's the tech of your Apple Watch and my Apple Watch, but it's not the tech of ankle monitors.
Are you sure?
No, but I'm in 2009 tech, 2007 tech, whenever the hell it was, they didn't have that.
I don't know. I think that was the implication, that if we cut it off, it will set off the alarm. But what's the difference? If you run out with it on, it sets off the alarm. So it's really 6 of one, half dozen of another. You might as well just leave it on because you can leave faster, which is what they
do. All right. So, it seems like a little odd because I hear stories. Like I watch a lot of true crime.
Yep.
And a lot of times people just leave their ankle monitors behind. And then they go out and get some shit. They get caught.
Sure.
But it's not like the alarms go off. Or maybe they do and the police are like, you know, oh, the alarm went off. Better send a patrol car kind of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the response time that's that's the clincher here.
Right.
There's guards in the room 14 feet away.
Yeah. It just seems crazy to me that if it was that easy to just cut off, it wouldn't be that effective, right? And maybe it is, but I feel like there's probably some circuitry through the band that when it's severed, you know, it causes it to...
All right. Your explanation makes a lot more sense than my Mad Maxian one.
Anyways, I don't know. I've never had to wear one, thankfully, and I don't think I'd know anyone that has, so...
No, me neither. Maybe someday.
Well, anyways.
But the other thing is that I have a 6-year-old... And whenever I try and get Jasper to do something, it's like, okay, let's go. Are you ready? Yeah, I'm ready. I just want to do one thing.
Of course.
And usually that thing is, it's like, what are you going to do? I have to go check on something. It's like, okay, it's time for bed. It's not time for crafts. It's not time for getting any of your toys to play with. What do you have to go do?
Uh-huh.
I have to check on something. I'll be right back.
Uh-huh.
And then he goes downstairs. And I don't even know what he does. Sometimes I don't even know what he does. This time he came up with a big bag of licorice. Like, well, first of all, where did you get the bag? Second of all, why do you have the bag? And then when he came back up, he was very proud that he was able to go down and get the bag of licorice without my wife or our visiting guest or the dog knowing that he had gone downstairs.
Yeah, so, all these temporary people in your house right now, you have house guests with you. And
yes.
Yeah, okay.
So he is able to do that. So I applaud the sneakiness of him, of doing that.
Sure.
And him being able to, you know, properly use his highly trained ninja skills, if you ask him if mm-hmm. he has those. He absolutely does. But it's always, I just got to do one thing.
Sure.
I just got to do one thing. So no, it's time to lie down and close your eyes. It's not time to go and get licorice or your Captain America shield or whatever you've got designs on doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's always, so just reminded me of that. It's just like, oh, come on. You don't have to do anything. Let's just go.
No, Lance says he needs to do something first, and we don't find out what that is yet. We do cut outside. They're running away. The foam suits are chasing them and shooting. Daryl hangs back to return fire, and Carol and Lance escape out a door. So mm-hmm. they get out of there outside, but they leave Daryl behind.
Yeah, but Daryl says, I'll get out of this, right? So he doesn't tell us the plan, so we absolutely know he's going
to
get out of it.
Totally. That's right. We go back over to Yumiko. She is following the guy from the hospital, just like she said she would. They make their way through the crowd, like in the open outdoor spaces of the Commonwealth, and suddenly the guy has stopped, turned around, and is staring right at her.
Oh, man, he made her.
He did, but she plays it cool and walks right past him, minding her own business, like she wasn't even following him to begin with.
Yep, so that's a crazy Ivan right there. You ever do a crazy Ivan? You've seen Hunt for Red October?
Yes.
And so I'm not sure if this is a real thing, but I don't think it is. So they, when the American sub was following the Russian sub, they would say "Crazy Ivan" because the Russian sub would all of a sudden turn to see if there was anybody following them,
mm-hmm.
And they would either turn to starboard or to port, and it was a whole thing, right? So I mean, it made me think of that. It's like, okay, well, every once in a while, if you think you're being followed, just pull a crazy Ivan. Just turn around and stop or turn and do something completely unexpected and see if they continue to follow you.
I mean, just see if anything weird happens, right? Like,
yeah, anything weird happens.
Yeah.
But that's why you have good tradecraft like this. If somebody does something unexpected, you just follow through. And at that point, you swap out the eye, right? You say, I've been made into your secret microphone that you obviously have because you're a spy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in your shoe. I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know where spies keep their microphones.
No.
Maybe in their ears, like earbuds, like everybody wears nowadays, probably is the best thing.
Yeah.
So you say, I've been made, and then they swap out the eye and continue on with their day.
Okay. Well, that's what happened here. He looked at her, and she just went on about her day.
Yep.
We go over to Pamela. She is preparing for the press conference that is going to announce Yumiko being Eugene's lawyer. Her new assistant is taking notes, and Pam almost calls her Max, which is kind of a funny, uncomfortable little scene. The phone rings, and she has apparently delivered some news, which we immediately find out is the fact that Lance has escaped, because we cut to Pamela being escorted to the cell where Lance was. She finds Sebastian's body, and his head is just smashed in. And Lance's coin is left there like a calling card in the gore.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that Lance had to do was just smash the crap out of Sebastian's head and body, I guess. And he did. So Pamela picks the coin out of the remains of her dead son's head.
And she's pissed.
And she is pissed. And you can see it on her face. Really,
she definitely has pissed face.
Yeah, absolutely.
You remember the days when you'd be doing something either around your house or in your office or something, and the phone would ring and you'd pick it up and say hello?
I mean, barely, Jason. That's crazy.
That's just ludicrous now.
Yeah, I know.
It's more of an instant message saying, hey, we need to schedule a call kind of thing.
Yeah.
Nobody calls me. Does anybody call? Do you still have a landline?
No, I don't have a landline.
Okay, good for you, because you only had your mom and people trying to sell you shit calling you.
That's right. We had a landline up until a few years ago at this point, which maybe less than that, 2 years, which we actually held out longer than most people that I know, to be honest. And Yeah, it was my mom that phoned. Well, my parents, both of them called. And you're right. So like telemarketers and stuff like that. So we finally got rid of it. And now the only calls I answer on my cell phone are from my wife, my kids, and my mom.
Yeah. If my wife calls, I'll answer. She doesn't answer when I call, but that's okay. Usually it's in her pocket and her phone is silent. Sure, I don't even know what's going on. But I don't answer the phone.
I'd answer if you called, just for the record. Well,
yeah, what's wrong would be how you answered that. I don't even, do I know your phone number? Do I have you even programmed? I must have you programmed.
Well,
I text you.
That happens occasionally, yes.
So yeah, okay, I could get a hold of you if I had to.
Right. Well, Pamela gets a call, she gets the news, and she answers the phone, luckily, because it was important news.
Because it's 2007.
That's right. we go over to Carol and Lance. They are outside the Commonwealth walls now, so they made it out. He remarks that it looks like a prison from the outside. Huh, funny that. And he won't stop talking as they're walking along. He's complimenting Carol, saying he hopes Dixon is okay. And she kind of realizes that he's playing mind games with her and trying to be overly friendly. So she threatens to kill him, points her gun at him. But they hear some vehicles nearby. And we see two motorcycles and a Jeep coming down a nearby road with stormtroopers in them. So Lance and Carol hide in the bushes. And Lance says that, I know how we can lose them. And then she follows him away.
Nice.
That's right.
Because they're not wearing stupid white foam armor. Because you can't hide in that shit.
No, it sticks out like a sore thumb in the forest, yeah.
Or even pumpkin-colored armor. Like, what were they thinking?
I mean, if you're
a little bit of camouflage would be all right.
But then, if you're in a pumpkin patch, Mercer would be harder to see.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's true. You know what I found out the other day?
What's
watermelons.
That?
They're berries.
What? Watermelons are berries?
They're berries.
Those are big berries.
They're the big berries. That's it. We can go on now.
Okay. Great. Thanks for the info.
No problem.
We have Yumiko, and she is talking to Eugene at his cell. I find it awfully convenient that she can just kind of walk in and talk to the prisoner with, you know, soldiers standing right there. I mean, I know they're whispering kind of, but they're just talking about whatever they want.
Well, she's prosecuting him. She's gathering information. It's her job.
I guess so. As the prosecutor, though, I mean, if she was the defense attorney, yes, she's meeting with her client, but she's the prosecutor on behalf of the government. I mean, there would be possibly some opportunity for an interview, but I just don't feel like they'd be doing it alone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's not our justice system, right? It's the Commonwealth's justice system. Maybe he doesn't have the right to an attorney.
Oh, fine. Who knows? Well, she's talking to him, but she's telling him what's happened to everybody. And she says that she doesn't have a choice but to prosecute him. Pamela has all the leverage. And Eugene says it's okay. He's made his own bed. It's not her fault. But he says there still must be something we can do to help our friends because he couldn't live with himself, even if he doesn't have that much longer to live, if he didn't try everything possible. He does say to her that, you know, you have to have some faith. Despite how bleak it looks, this is not the end. He even uses those words, this is not the end.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help but think, yeah, Eugene, it almost is the end.
It almost is, yeah. Well, not really, but sort of in a way, right?
Sort of in a way. There's four more, so it's almost the end.
Well, that and the TV show is going to transform into other TV shows, right?
I know.
Death and rebirth and, you know, regrowth and all that kind of stuff.
I just do think it was an interesting choice of words, though.
And even in Canada, we don't have a right to a lawyer. We have the right to consult a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
but the lawyer cannot prevent the police from questioning you. So you can consult a lawyer, and the lawyer can say, don't say anything, you stupid fuck. And then the police will get you into an interrogation room anyway and ask you all the questions in the world.
Sure, but you don't have to say anything.
No, you don't have to say anything, and you've consulted an attorney. Then you can still ask all the questions in the world. You can't stop an interrogation like you can in the States and have an attorney present.
Oh.
You don't have that right in Canada.
Oh.
You can consult an attorney, get one on the phone, ask him anything you want, and then we're going back to the interrogation.
Interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'd never want to be in an interrogation room on either side. I would not want to interrogate anybody. That sounds like an uncomfortable kind of situation too.
Well, some people are really good at it though. That's
they
why
are,
they do it.
And all the power to them if they want to do that. Not everybody can be an interrogator or somebody that's being interrogated. Mm-hmm. If you want to go that route, all the power to you. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do a lot of things. And those are a couple of them, acting and interrogations.
Fair enough. But I did like this scene, other than I thought it was staged a little bit weird between Yumiko and Eugene. Just nice to see them interact and get Eugene's take on all of this, right? Sort of have him be updated on what's happening due to his actions. And I think his response was nice and appropriate in a way, right? He's upset about it. He's made his own bed. He's willing to face the consequences, but he also will stop at nothing to try to help if he can, right? Whatever he's capable of doing.
And why is the prison at the Commonwealth, why is everything so dark? You think they would turn a light on? It doesn't even seem like they have lamps. They just turned everything off and they're just letting the lighting come in from whatever windows
it's a good
are
question.
Available to them.
It's mood lighting.
The other one was very dark. There was very like little tiny lights outside each door. Mm-hmm. And this one has almost no lighting at all. You know?
They're saving power, maybe.
I guess so. It's weird.
Yeah. All right.
Turn a light on. Christ.
Wouldn't be too bad. All right. So Lance and Carol are making their way somewhere. It's nighttime now. Speaking of being dark, they come to an abandoned construction project from the early days of the Commonwealth. That's what Lance calls it. And he's still talking about how helping people is important, yada, yada. He asks, what comes after the unrest? He asks this of Carol. And he says, if Pamela dies, who will step into lead? Without anybody, the civilians will suffer the most. And he wonders if Carol would let the Commonwealth burn, as in just kind of fall apart. And he also says that the kids all deserve a better life. So he's kind of just trying to get under her skin a little bit about, you know, you're doing all these things, but are you really thinking long term? You know, if you cut the head off of this Commonwealth thing and it falls apart, aren't you just, you know, dooming 50,000 people to, you know, a community with no leadership and probably worse?
Yeah. He's trying to get under her skin.
Yeah. He absolutely is.
But she doesn't care. She doesn't give a shit. She's a sociopath.
Doesn't care
at least, at the very least, psychopath, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Doesn't care at all. I mean, she does care about the kids and things like that.
Carol at all.
Carol at all. She cares about the children. She does care about her friends. I mean, even if she hasn't thought ahead in the way that Lance is suggesting.
I think she cares about them, but I don't think she considers them people.
Like her friends and the children?
Yeah. Well, then, you know, that's the mark of a psychopath is that they can care about people that are close to them, but they don't consider that they have internal lives of their own.
Right.
They're more narcissists and it's all about me. It's like, it's not that I actively hate you. It's just, I don't think that your life matters at all.
Yeah.
Right.
It's all about me.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really believe that about Carol, but it could be there.
Well, as they're walking, they come across some zombies in the dark. A struggle ensues. And as I said, it's dark, so Carol can't really find Lance in this struggle. She uses the rifle that she's carrying that she got off one of the foam suits to kill a bunch of them. She ends up struggling up close with one, pulls its face right off, which was kind of cool, and kills it, and then sees Lance kind of standing up behind her, and he claims, oh, you know, the lights went out, and I thought you were right behind me, he says.
This whole thing was an ambush, right?
I mean, it was like a zombie ambush, yeah.
Yeah, it was in an area that Lance knew, mm-hmm. a previous project that he knew was infested with zombies, is my position. He got into it. You know, he got into a scrape with a zombie, which he was perfectly capable of getting out of, and he did get out of. Mm-hmm. He knocked the flashlight out of Carol's hand.
Yeah.
He knocked the flashlight away, I believe.
I think Carol
kicked it by accident.
Yeah.
And then he eventually got away from that zombie, which he was perfectly capable of doing. He was screaming the whole time to cause distraction.
Mm-hmm.
No light, screaming. trying to confuse Carol in this situation. And then he perfectly got away and then was up on and then managed to find the flashlight and then got up onto a ledge and waited for her to either come out of the situation or not.
Yep.
This absolutely was an ambush to try and kill Carol.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And she can tell. She knows what's going on here. And then they run off together before more zombies show up. You're right. He was trying to lead her into this situation that he knew he could manage and get separated from her and probably leave her to die, but didn't go as well as he hoped.
Yep.
So they come out, the two of them, Lance and Carol, come out through the woods and are immediately confronted by the foam suits with motorbikes. So they knew exactly where they were going to be somehow, and they raise their guns on them before they can do anything. Daryl appears and shoots them all dead, saving Carol and Lance.
So let's track Daryl's movements here. He was in a gunfight in the middle of the prison. He got out of the gunfight in the middle of the prison because he's Daryl and he's very skilled at this kind of thing.
Totally.
He jumped out a window, whatever. He crawled under a Jeep and then managed to secure himself under the Jeep without getting wrapped in the shaft there, the drivetrain.
Is that what happened? Like we get the shot of him like hiding under it, but are we supposed to believe that he was hanging on to that thing underneath and drove with them there?
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Well, what else would he do? It's a Jeep and two motorbikes. Was he running behind?
I mean, and how would he know exactly where they are? That's the other
thing. Why would he get under the Jeep? Did he know that he was going to meet up with Carol? There's a lot of flaws in Daryl's thinking here.
Not so much flaws, but missing information, right? Just how did he know to do this and how did he survive? You know, it's pretty hard to hang on to the bottom of a Jeep while it's driving on uneven terrain.
You use belts because, you know, people have done this in the past. It's like, okay, there's a noise in my truck. There's a clunking noise in my truck, but it only occurs when my truck gets up to like 50 miles an hour. So the obvious solution here is I'm going to strap myself to the underside of the truck and you get up to 50 miles an hour. I'm going to look for the clank. Right?
Makes sense.
This is a true story.
Of course it is.
Guy got wrapped up in the drivetrain. I'm not sure he died, but I think I saw this on the Darwin Awards.
He probably wanted to.
Either he died, which I think might have been the case, or he was severely injured to the point where he could no longer have children. Doesn't matter which. Mm-hmm. The Darwin Awards do not distinguish between those two kinds of events.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure he died. So strapping yourself to the underside of a vehicle is a bad idea. The only person that can do it is Indiana Jones.
And apparently Daryl Dixon.
I don't believe this. Yeah. I believe Indiana Jones because I saw it with my own eyes.
Okay.
This, I just saw him crawl out. Didn't the alien in one of the Aliens movies do exactly this at one point?
Maybe.
That's how the alien got onto the mothership in Aliens. When Ripley got back up to the ship, that's how the alien mother got out of the, she crawled out from under the, from the ship that took off from the planet.
Okay.
Sorry to spoil Aliens.
So Indiana Jones and an alien can do it.
Yeah. And Daryl Dixon, apparently.
Apparently
for some
Dixon.
Reason, like at least Indiana Jones had a reason. He was stuck on the bumper of a vehicle that was driving very, very fast, a deuce and a half, which is a very high clearance. And luckily somebody dug a convenient trench underneath so that he could be dragged along behind. But, and the alien had a purpose because it was trying to get on the ship because they were going to nuke the site from orbit. Right.
Yep.
So the alien didn't want to be there anymore. She recognized that. Daryl. Was he just speculating? Like, it's like, okay, this is the Jeep that will ultimately find Carol. So I'm going to strap myself under it and take my weapon so that when it stops, I can sneak out like the alien in Aliens and shoot everybody from behind with, if I'm not wrong, Carol and Hornsby on the other side of the foam suit guys within the line of fire.
It did kind of look like it, but I think maybe Daryl was off to the side a little bit.
I would hope so, that he would know enough not to, you know, because you got to be aware of not only what you're aiming at, but what's on the other side of what you're aiming at, because your aim's never perfect.
Of course. That, I think, though, after hearing you talk about it, is probably the least of the problems with this whole sequence.
It just seems awfully convenient.
Yeah, unless we're missing something.
Impossible.
You know, unless we're missing something about how Daryl would know to hang on to that Jeep or something else. But you're right. It seems a little crazy. But lucky he did it, though, man, because he saved their bacon.
Yeah, no, it was quite the look.
Anyways, let's move on. We go to the press conference now. Yumiko's at the press conference. And before it starts, Pamela lets her know that Connie was arrested. So we didn't see that happen, but if we're to believe Pamela, Connie was apprehended. Yumiko is defiant at this information and everything that's going on. She calls all this bullshit theater. And then Pamela goes on stage and the press conference begins. So another guy, one of Pamela's people, is up there recapping the events of the riot. And Pamela leans to the soldier beside her, whose name is Colonel Vickers. I had to look that up. And asks if there's an update on the fugitives. And the soldier says there are teams sweeping every quadrant. And Yumiko appears to hear this. I wasn't 100% sure, but she does appear to hear this conversation.
How many quadrants are there?
Every quadrant, all the quadrants.
I would assume four.
Yeah, probably.
Wouldn't you have multiple, more than four? Like, it's like, okay, we're searching the four cardinal compass points of the Earth. It's like, didn't that happen in Princess Bride, where they sent his four fastest ships in the four directions to try and find her, whoever they were looking for?
But, did he? I don't know.
Well, that's what he said he did, but it seems kind of, you know, counterintuitive. It's just like, okay, there should be multiple sectors instead of just four quadrants. We looked in all four directions and we couldn't find them.
Yeah. Well, Yumiko walks on the stage, and as she's passing by, we hear over the soldier's radio that Carol, Daryl, and Hornsby all got away.
Oh boy.
So convenient.
How did they know that?
Well, when they're standing in the forest there before Daryl drops off the bottom of the thing, one of them says something about radio in that we've found them. And if there's, there was something went wrong and we had to kill them all. But I don't think they had time to radio because they were dead pretty quick after that.
No. So a couple things. One is they would have thought Daryl got away a long time ago because they didn't know where he was. I assume they didn't plan to have Daryl underneath the Jeep. They didn't help them. They might have.
Yeah.
That'd be almost as plausible as the rest of this bullshit.
Sure.
But they didn't know. And the only explanation for they all got away was that it's like, okay, radio in that they all got away. Like, what? What? You want me to tell them that they all got away? Well, how do you know they're all going to get away? It's like, well, I just assume that we're a bunch of red shirts, even though we're wearing white, and they're principal, characters in this story. So it doesn't matter if we're here or not. I assume they're getting away. So radio in that they all got away.
Yeah.
Might as well tell them about Daryl, too. We've been holding that under our hats for a couple hours now.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It sure is convenient for the story, though, because I do think it was important that Yumiko heard that as she walks by. She gets up to the podium and she starts reading this prepared statement that they have given her. It's all pro-Commonwealth BS, you know.
No, it isn't. It's ambiguous bullshit that could go either way is the thing. As soon as she started talking, I'm thinking, yeah, she doesn't have to be talking about what Pamela thinks she's talking about. She could be talking the exact opposite and everything still makes sense. So carefully prepared, her new assistant should be fired.
Fire that woman. Well, she does eventually, Yumiko, go off script, and at first she thanks her brother, very deliberately reminding the audience how important he is as a surgeon at the Commonwealth. And then, in a shocking twist, instead of saying she's going to prosecute Eugene, she says she is going to defend him.
Yeah.
So there you go. And then as she walks off stage, she throws the speech down at Pamela's feet.
Yeah.
Which I liked.
Okay. So I'm picking this apart pretty hard, this episode. So here's the situation that that these people are in at the moment. Pamela wants Yumiko to prosecute Eugene.
Correct.
Yumiko went to her brother to talk to him about it, and he said Pamela wants you to crack and not do this. And so, but well, no, she also wants
her,
you to.
Her brother said maybe the best thing you can do is just do it because it'll save the most people.
Yes, but didn't he say something about Pamela, you know, not expecting you to actually do this?
Hmm.
Or she just at least has to be planning for Yumiko to not do this. She knows that she's on the fence. She has to know. She's not an idiot. So she doesn't, she can't have complete confidence in Yumiko's position. If she does, she's a complete moron. It doesn't make any sense. So this carefully prepared statement, they left a lot in the hands of Yumiko to tell the audience. I think that if they were unsure, they should have orchestrated this in order to not give Yumiko an out. Right. Say Yumiko is going to prosecute Eugene because of his crimes, and here she is to talk about that.
Right. Right?
Then she doesn't really have a position other than what has been dictated to her.
Yeah.
So this is just a folly of bullshit. Like, Yumiko, fine. Her brother, you know, Tim, fine.
Tommy,
fine. Eugene, fine. Pamela, moron. Speechwriter, fired.
Got it. Okay. They could have handled it a lot better if they really wanted it to go one way.
If they just spent more than the 30 seconds thinking about it than I did, then everything would be okay. But then we wouldn't have a drama, would we?
No, we would not.
So we wouldn't have a story here. So I'm forgetting that they're doing things for high drama's sake, because in this universe, everybody likes to have drama or make-believe.
Yeah, well, right? Fair enough in this universe and the fact that it's a TV show. But I see your point. Like, you use a stronger hand, basically. Don't give, as you said, Yumiko any ability to kind of turn their words around and support her own feelings on the situation. So,
yeah.
Poorly executed by Pamela and everyone involved on her side.
Yes.
So we cut back over to Lance, Daryl, and Carol, and they have arrived at a building, or at least they're looking at a building through some binoculars, and it's guarded by a couple of foam suits. They're watching from a distance. Lance says it should be no problem to take them out. He also mentions that there's a supply train that will take them to their friends. And I'm like, Jesus, they've come this all this way. I'm like thinking, okay, this is the building where they're holding everyone. But no, they still have to take a train somewhere. It seems like they've really moved these people far away. Carol and Daryl are surprised to hear about the train, as far as I can tell. And Lance says it's for connecting communities, which I think is interesting.
Well, that's what trains are for, right? They're not for.
It really is.
You know, not for going to the mall.
No, it's true.
You know, there's train tracks around here, but I can't take a train to the mall.
No, you cannot. But you could take a train to another city.
Well, which I do. You know, when I want to go to Toronto, I probably go on the train tracks and take the train to downtown Toronto. It's only half an hour. It's fine.
Well, that's fun. So they have this functioning train, which I'm a little surprised we haven't heard about before now, but is what it is.
Trains are pretty simple. Right? They're not hard to, a big diesel engine turns wheels, pulls shit on tracks.
Okay, fine. But I'm not so sure I could just pop into one of those, fire it up, and start driving the train.
No. And there's video games out there. You should play more train simulators then, because I played a train simulator once, and it's fucking hard.
I bet it is. Yeah.
It's not easy to just to get trains going from zero to anything other than zero.
Yeah, that's easy. It's getting from zero to one. That's the hard part.
Yeah, same with planes. Like, planes don't have keys, right? You don't need a key to start a plane. That's because they're not easy. And if you don't know how to start a plane, you know, have at it.
Yeah, good luck. You're probably not getting it done.
And it takes like 30 minutes and somebody would notice.
Probably, yes. Well, Daryl now makes it clear that Lance will not be coming with them from this point on. Lance, of course, thinks that he needs them to do this without burning down the Commonwealth. He says they can still make the place better. And Carol and Daryl suggest that he can run away, you know, if he wants to try to take a chance on surviving. And he knows he won't survive on his own. But Daryl and Carol don't care. And then Daryl starts advancing on Lance a little bit.
My favorite line here is Carol's when she says, you might survive.
Yeah, you might, but we don't care.
It was a really nicely delivered line.
It was good. Yeah,
it was great.
So Lance starts walking away, and as he's passing the back of the Jeep, he grabs a rifle, but before he can shoot, Carol puts an arrow through his neck, and Lance falls to the ground, choking on his own blood as they get in the Jeep and drive away.
So a couple things. What was Lance's plan here? Like, he didn't want to go off on his own, so he was going to shoot Daryl and Carol so that he would have to go off on his own?
Yeah, good question. Either way, he's on his own and unable to survive, so...
This way he has a better-than-even chance of dying because he's got two well-trained, well-motivated people with weapons, and he's going to spend a good 3 to 5 seconds grabbing a weapon from a different area and turning around, aiming, and then firing.
Unless he wasn't going to fire and he was simply going to threaten them to come with him, which doesn't make any sense, but maybe that's what he was thinking.
I don't know. It's a dumb plan. Got himself killed.
Yeah, got himself killed. Well, he gets an arrow through the neck, which was pretty awesome. And I did notice that he dies. He very clearly died, but they didn't stab him in the head, so he's going to wake up as a zombie at some point.
That's just insulting is what that is. I mean, between the two of these people, they stabbed friggin' what's-his-name in the head when they saw him in the cell there.
Sebastian, yeah.
Sebastian, they stabbed him in the head for crying out loud. It's insulting to not stab him in the head, and Carol didn't even retrieve the arrow. It's just, that's such a huge fuck you.
I thought for a second that as they drove away, they were just going to drive the car over his head and squish it, because you see that sometimes in things like this, but even that didn't happen. So Lance is just lying there. He's going to become a zombie, and I wonder if we'll see zombie Lance.
I would like that very much.
Yeah, I think it would be okay.
I think that would be neat with the arrow sticking out of his neck.
Well, that'd be fun, yeah.
Oh, just so insulting. Like, there's unspoken rules in this world, right? You kill somebody, you stab them in the head.
Right.
It's the right thing to do.
It is, and you don't want to make more zombies, but here they are.
Right. But he's so, unimportant to them that they're not even going to bother not making a zombie out of him.
God, they don't think about him at all.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for them. We cut over into a Commonwealth prisoner bus. Everybody in this bus has a hood over their heads, and one of the foam suit soldiers is going down the center aisle and injecting people in the neck with some kind of sedative, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
And we specifically see him inject Ezekiel, who appears to pass out immediately and just slump over.
Uh-huh.
And we cut outside the vehicles. They are traveling in a large convoy of military vehicles with this bus amongst them. And cut to black, the end.
So
this final scene here is just them transporting all of the people they've taken away somewhere. Doesn't look to be on a train to me.
No, they're driving to the train station in order to put them on the train to take them to the whatever the depot is.
All right, fair enough. Maybe. I don't know.
Okay, so dude is walking around on a bus. Okay, white foam suit dude is walking around on a bus.
Correct.
The bus is full of people that are all chained down with hoods over their heads. The bus is driving around on uneven terrain, I would assume.
Yes, I see where you're going.
So this guy is sedating these people. So anybody who has their head up gets a fresh sedation. So I assume they were all sedated before, but he is supposed to re-sedate them when they put their heads up wondering what's going on. So he's taking this very sharp needle full of this toxin of whatever, and he's walking around this bus, driving around on the uneven terrain, trying to stab these people in the right place in the neck.
Yep.
Without stabbing himself or getting them in the ear or something else. For what purpose exactly? They got hoods over their heads. They're chained down. They're on a bus. You can't really see out the windows.
No, I don't know.
Sedation sounds expensive.
And unnecessary.
And unnecessary and risky.
And risky. That's right.
I don't know.
You know what occurred to me is that Ezekiel, we go into his mask, right? The camera's inside the hood with him, so we know it's him. And I thought there must be a reason they're showing us him and nobody else. And I thought maybe because they're jabbing him in the neck. And remember, he just had thyroid surgery. So there's something different about his neck maybe. And like, maybe they were going to show the audience that the sedation wasn't working on him, or the guy did kind of miss or hit scar tissue or something like that. Right.
Got to run him right in the goiter.
Something like that. Exactly. But, and I thought, oh, so maybe Ezekiel isn't going to pass out from this, but he sure seemed to, unless that's all an act. So I do think there's something to them showing us specifically Ezekiel and no one else. And he's going to be part of whatever happens next on that bus, which some sort of escape plan or something.
Okay. How about this?
Okay.
So Ezekiel is a former zookeeper, right?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
So and in a way, a current zookeeper.
A current zookeeper. So he has worked with a lot of animals, including tigers and lions and bears. Oh, my. Maybe he's had access to whatever tranquilizers that they're using, because the tranquilizers that they use could be animal related. It could be horse tranquilizers, right?
Sure.
Which I assume is, you know, the kind of thing that they would use against large animals.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Ezekiel has, when he was a zookeeper, had a bit of a drug problem, and then he was using these horse tranquilizers recreationally, and now he's built up somewhat of an immunity.
Maybe, but I think it's more likely that if he is not sedated, it's due to the fact that he just had surgery on a prominent part of his neck.
I think it's because he's a drug addict that uses horse tranquilizers, recovering addict.
Sure.
That used a lot of horse tranquilizer recreationally. Like, he's stabbing between his toes just to get his fix, you know.
Oh, God. Tiger tranquilizer, maybe, even.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah, might be the same thing. I don't know.
Maybe he, once he got his job as the petting zoo organizer, that he was able to give them the formula for the tranquilizer in order to be able to reacquire his habit.
Maybe so.
During the zombie apocalypse. It's just a theory.
We will have to wait until next week or a future week to find out. We don't know where these people are going exactly, but they're on this bus and they're all knocked out by this tranquilizer.
You know what the biggest problem is with my theory, which is one of the reasons why I don't actually believe my own theory.
Okay.
How do you portray this on screen? How do you tell the audience about this on screen? Oh, I used to, it's got to be like 15 minutes of exposition. I used to, you know, have a drug problem where I used this exact tranquilizer. And then when I got back over here and got the petting zoo and I really wanted to tranquilize the goats, because who doesn't? I taught them how to make this thing and
right,
so that I could get back into it. But I've built up somewhat of a tolerance. But even though I've not used it in the last 10 years, the tolerance has gone down quite a bit, but I still have a bit of a tolerance, and it was just enough for me to remain conscious during this bus ride.
Well, I'm glad even you realize how wacky it is.
It's not wacky. It's just hard to portray on screen. Right? It's hard to communicate that to the audience.
Yes, I agree. Well, that's it for the episode. And, you know, overall, I thought it was fine. I don't think it was quite as exciting as last week's. Last week's I thought was really good. You know, this one, to me, it felt a little bit like they were kind of moving the pieces around the board a bit. You know, they established that Daryl and Carol are on the trail. Yumiko wasn't going to go down with a fight, but they didn't really show that fight yet. You know what I mean? Like, they just kind of set it up. Connie escapes off camera and then is recaptured off camera. So I
guess Daryl gets into a fight off camera. I liked this episode too until we started talking about it.
Yeah.
Now I'm not so sure anymore.
You had a lot of nitpicks, which is fine. I mean, I guess Lance's death is kind of a big thing. He's a character that I expected to play a huge part in either the downfall or the redemption of the Commonwealth, whichever way this is going. And now he's just dead.
Dead isn't dead, right? He's not dead. He's just undead now. So he might still play a part.
Yeah, but I didn't expect him to be killed off like that.
Oh, my God. What if he's a variant?
Oh, he comes back as a super zombie?
He comes back as a super zombie and has, like, a particular set of skills and memories
that
will fuck some shit up.
Yeah. You never know, to be honest. I mean,
that'd be the best, actually. That's a best case scenario right there.
Okay. That might be kind of fun. Well, there you go. So it sounds like your opinion of this one maybe dipped a little bit after we sat here and spoke. And I think I'm kind of even keel on this.
Well, the pieces did get moved around. You know, to be fair, you said that there were, it seemed like they were moving the pieces around the board, and I agree with that, and I think that's okay. Okay, we have a train. We know, well, we don't have a train. We know about a train.
We are aware of a train now. Yeah.
We're getting out of the Commonwealth. I mean, sure, we might have a legal drama mixed into the next episode, which I'm not quite sure that I really want my legal drama mixed into my zombie apocalypse.
You never know, man. Like a solid, like, trial episode in the Walking Dead.
I mean,
it's going to feel weird for one of the last four episodes ever, but...
The Star Wars prequels did spend a lot of time on trade agreements.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could mix your trade agreements into your Jedi Knight fights, but can you mix your legal dramas into your zombie apocalypse movies?
We're going to find out.
I don't know. As long as Jar Jar doesn't show up, I think I'll be okay.
Yeah, I think that's key to this.
Key, really.
Yeah. Anything else about this one before we move on?
No.
All right. There you go. That is Season 11, Episode 20, What's Been Lost. And we will come back next week with some feedback from you about this one. So get that into us. Now, before we wrap up this episode, of course, we have to talk about the Patreon Prize-a-Palooza and give away another prize. First, though, I just want to send out a huge thank you to some new patrons that signed up this week. That would be Sarah B., Janice C., Ethan M., and longtime listener Shenandoah G,
nice.
who's been listening. I went back and did some searching through the email, and I found emails from her back as far as like 2012, I think. So
wow,
long time. So thank you to all of you for becoming patrons, and of course to everybody who listens and supports the show in any way. Now, this week's prize, the Lucille baseball cap. It's a pretty cool hat, and we need to give it away to someone, Jason. So why don't you do what you're going to do and tell me who wins the cap?
You know, okay, so about a week ago, my son and I went to the mall, and while I was there, I went to the bank machine to get some cash out because, you know, that sounds like fun. Don't do that very often.
Not anymore, no. Hardly ever carry cash.
I got some cash out, and I was looking at it when I got home because, wow, money. Look at this, actual money.
Fancy.
And I noticed, I saw the number 35 written on one of the $5 bills. Hmm. I'm wondering, that's a really weird thing to do. And I thought, you know, I've heard stories of people writing their names on bills and then, you know, letting them out into the universe and then seeing what happens to them. So what I did was I took a list of all the Patreons, and I wrote their names on $10 bills. So I went and got a whole stack of $10 bills, and I wrote the name on each one.
Uh-huh.
And then I went and spent them on various shit, like at Tim Hortons, and went to the mall, and, you know, I threw some at cars and stuff. And it was, you know, just basically spread them around the town.
Just drop them off a bridge onto the highway, you know, see what
happens. That kind of thing, sure. You know, free money. But then I needed a way to get them back, uh-huh. Right? I can't just go and start selling something. Which actually ultimately I decided to do. So I went and I bought a whole bunch of cocaine. So
wow.
I bought like a big brick of coke, and I split that out into dime bags, and I started selling dime bags on the street. So I started collecting $10 bills. I got one back. I got a $10 back, sold it to this guy. I won't really describe him, but, you know, I sold him a couple $100 worth of coke, and he gave it all to me in tens, like rolled up ratty tens that he pulled out of his pocket. They're pretty gross. I wore gloves. It was fine. Anyway, so the $10 that I got back for selling a dime bag of coke to this guy had the name Oren D on it.
Okay.
And, he's the winner for this particular week.
All right. Well, congratulations, Oren, I think. I mean, the prize is cool, but the method of prize selection is questionable at best. But boy.
Yeah. Well, I got a bunch of coke left over. I don't know what to do with.
Well, I'm not going to help you out with that one.
No comment.
No comment. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Oren D. I will be in touch by email, as I always am. Later in the week to figure out where and how to get the prize out to you. So thanks again to everyone for becoming who is a patron. And, you know, if you're, we've got a few more of these to do. So you're still in the running if you haven't won one of the prizes yet. All right. That's going to wrap up everything for this podcast, other than me telling you how you can get in touch with us if you would like. And I suggest you do, because we have a feedback show coming up and we would love to hear your feedback on this episode, good or bad or otherwise. It's always fun to read it and play it or read it on the podcast. So to get in touch, visit talkingdeadpodcast.com and click on send voicemail at the top. You can record a message that will get sent right into us. If that's not your thing, just record it onto your phone and send us the audio file. That's a really good way to do it as well. Let us, you know, just a reminder, let us know where you are and your name. Love to sort of plot those on a map as I do every week. And be as brief as you can. I don't want to cut anyone off, but we've got some long messages recently, which are amazing, but it just means I have more work to do to edit them down. And, you know, I love doing work, Jason. So
of course,
of course. That's right. You can also find us on Twitter at Talking Dead or by email at talkingdeadpodcast@gmail.com. All right. Thank you again, everybody. We'll see you later this week for the feedback show. And until then, my name is Chris.
My name is Jason.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.